Welcome back. I'm Erin, and I'm here with Ethan and Scott. And this episode is about why Maura left Amherst in February of 2004 and drove to New Hampshire. And there's obviously several different theories. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to present an alternative based on new information that we've received and processed the last year and a half to 2 years. And then in the second half of the episode, we're joined by Julie Murray, who responds to some of the information that we talk about in the first half.
But I would like to add to that.
Okay.
And from my perspective of following this for the time that I have, the most common thing that everybody comes back to is, well, why did she leave? Why did she end up where she ended up? And if you ask the family, you ask Julie, you ask Bill, you ask any of these people, and they don't really know. You know, obviously her dad thinks that she was heading towards Bartlett because it was an area that they had vacationed and gone to before. But in the end of the day, they really didn't know. When we first started talking about this issue and this theory that you had, it was the first time that it was a theory that was based in facts that we've learned about the case that could actually give some reason to why she went up that direction. And prior to that, I had never heard anything factual that really made any sense. You know, there's some evidence that she's getting away for a day or two based on what she packs, but that's the only physical evidence that we have that she was planning on getting away. We just don't know why she went that direction. But I think that when you start to piece together some of these other things that you think that she may have done, and then also piece together some of the things that we think she did before she left, I really think that this is a theory that should be genuinely looked at.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. So the first and I think the most prominent theory early on and for several years was the suicide theory. So according to Terry O'Connell's notes from 2004, he says that the Roush and Murray families met with Haverhill Police Chief Jeff Williams, who told them it was his belief that Maura had either run away or has come to the area to commit suicide. Family members were stunned by the comments and asked how they, Haverhill and the New Hampshire State Police, came up with that logic. They said that Maura had alcoholic beverages, Tylenol PM, and aspirin in her car. The Murray and Roush family said that aspirin and Tylenol was common, and Mrs. Roush actually commented to law enforcement personnel, quote, "God help me if I go missing. I always have similar pills in the console of my car." She said her comments were ignored. The families were then told later that another theory bolstering the suicide theory was that a novel, Not Without Peril, by Nicholas Howe, was found in the car. A section of the book, A Question of Life and Death, was marked with a picture of Maura's younger brother, Curtis. Fred Murray said that he had bought the book for Maura several years prior, and it was a favorite of hers. He said that she had it autographed by Mr. Howe. Bill Roush concurred with his comments and said that she had read it over and over again.
Interesting. Okay.
So basically, their theory that she was going to commit suicide was based on the book, Not Without Peril, and the fact that she had Tylenol PM and alcohol in her car.
Yeah, so like nothing.
Yeah. And the thing that's frustrating about that is that what was also in her car was her books for class, like these giant textbooks.
Right. Oh, well, who's to say why that was there?
I mean, you know, they focus on this one book that her father had said she'd read several times and was her favorite book.
Right. Well, and from the Oxygen show, we can sort of, I guess, conclude that the only reason they maybe even went down that road was because of Cecil Smith's conversation with Fred, which was like an off-the-cuff conversation, according to Fred, prompted by like repeated questions about that. So it seems like, is it possible they went down this whole route because of just like one random comment
that we are not even sure really happened, or it was taken out of context?
Yeah, and that was prompted by the question itself from a police officer. Like, it's awful to contemplate, but it's entirely possible that that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think in the interview with Fred, they were also asking him, is there anything that you can think of a reason why she might hurt herself? So they were already like leaning towards that theory when they questioned Fred.
Right.
And to be clear, I mean, they do have to ask those questions, but it's just when they ignore all evidence to the contrary, for example, returning 79 cans and bottles before she left to get $3.95 and sending her email in at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And stuff like that would all suggest that she was coming back and was not suicidal. That's the part that's just questionable.
Right.
I think a lot of people based the suicide theory off of this ominous email that she packed all of her things up and left it on top of the bed.
Right. Quote unquote suicide note.
Yeah.
They never said it was a suicide note. They just try to kind of seemingly imply that it could be because she left it like exposed or prominent as if she was trying to like leave a message. That's clearly the implication that you're going to draw from the fact that like, oh, everything was packed, but this one email was out. So it's like, okay, so that means she's trying to send a message, right? Like that's the conclusion you're definitely going to draw.
Exactly. And they do that by saying, this was in the press release on June 8th, 2004 from Lieutenant Scurinza. By Monday morning, February 9th, Maura had packed up all her belongings in her dorm room at UMass, putting everything neatly in boxes and putting all of the boxes on her bed along with a personal note she had recently received from her boyfriend.
Right. Now we think that that wasn't even recently received, right? That it was 2 years old at the time?
Yes. In fact, it was a 2-year-old email. But also, there were lots of other things in that room and on the bed. According to Terry's notes, he says that on Maura's bed was a West Point shirt along with cards, notes, and letters from Bill. Law enforcement personnel in New Hampshire, especially the New Hampshire State Police, told the press numerous times that Maura had left a letter for her boyfriend, Bill Rausch, in her UMass dorm. Scurinza can be seen on June 3rd, 2004, Boston television show Chronicle speaking about this. No such letter has ever been seen. The families felt that only served to bolster Lieutenant Scurinza's suicide theory.
Yes.
Scurinza also labored on about Maura and Bill's difficult long-distance relationship between Massachusetts and Oklahoma. Family members note that Bill Rausch called Lieutenant Scurinza numerous times to correct the misinformation about the alleged note left for him in the dorm by Maura, yet Scurinza never returned any calls. When Maura's father, Fred, tried to call Scurinza, he too was met with no contact from Scurinza. The families feel, because of Lieutenant Scurinza's misstatements and runaway slash suicide theories, it inhibited national media attention.
Mm-hmm. Probably. It probably did. And if you're really cynical, then that was the entire point, right?
Yeah.
I think that part of it is like, you know, 15 years later, we sit here and we have a more clear picture of all of the evidence. And I get that. Like, you know, on a Wednesday, they had not gone to UMass and gone through her things or seen any emails or anything like that. But what do they do when they do go to UMass later? They end up taking an email out of all the stuff that they could pick from her activities at UMass. They pick the email to bolster their theory of something that they've already thrown out.
Yeah. And they neglected all of the other notes
right.
and letters from Bill that she'd received since then that were the complete opposite, that were very loving and showed that their relationship was just fine. And that will come into play later.
Hmm.
So that was the police's theory early on. And obviously the remnants and the implications have been fairly long lasting.
Mm-hmm.
The runaway theory, I have to give them a little bit more of a break on that one because it is pretty clear that she had items with her in the car that you would take on a trip. And she did email her professors saying that there was a death in the family, so she wouldn't be in class. So there is like a little bit more evidence for that, that she was, you know, trying to get away. Doesn't mean that she was running away for forever.
Right. Right. And then you're getting into like, oh, well, when the police said they thought she might be running away, like, did they didn't necessarily mean forever. They just maybe they meant like just for like a couple weeks or something. But it usually when you hear about runaway, it's like, oh, so they were trying to like get away forever. They're trying to lose themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't seem like based on the other evidence, like the fact that she had her textbooks with her, at least she wasn't like determined that she was definitely running away forever.
Right. And she didn't have clothes for more than a few days.
Right.
So the other thing about the suicide theory or runaway theory is if they truly believed that the dogs had gotten a scent and that she more than likely got into a car 100 yards or so from the accident scene, then what difference does it make if her plans were thwarted?
Yeah, well, it raises the question of whether it was ever a real theory or it's just a theory for the cameras to get people off, to get media off their back, which is kind of what I think at this point is that, you know, did Scurinza ever really believe that she was running away? or committing suicide. I'm not convinced that he ever actually believed that. I think he just said that. And maybe that's even worse thing to say about him, that he's just like a straight up liar. But like, I see that kind of stuff all the time. Like, there's the message you give to the public, and then there's what you think internally in your professional opinion.
And I think you can convince yourself of it too.
Yeah. Well, it could have happened.
All right. So we have the suicide theory, the runaway theory. And I think that it's also pretty common that people think that she was just trying to get away for a few days. She wasn't actually running away. She was just taking a little personal vacation.
Yeah, which has kind of been like my theory.
So I guess this episode is about offering an alternative hypothesis to why she might have been in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. It definitely doesn't mean this is certainly why she was there, because I don't think we can ever fully know exactly why she went when she went, but it is one possibility.
So how did this start? How did you come up with starting to think about this?
Well, so I guess it was in September of 2017 that I actually met up with Art. He lives down here in DC or Virginia. And he had mentioned something about Maura getting a speeding ticket in New Hampshire in 2003. And I thought that was interesting, but I didn't really know what to do with it. I didn't think that he felt it was interesting enough to pursue it. So I sort of just forgot about it for a while until maybe like 6 months later or so. I thought, well, maybe if I just send out some records requests and try to find out where she was going or where she was when she got the speeding ticket, maybe that could inform something about why she might have been in New Hampshire, because the speeding ticket was definitely issued by New Hampshire.
Okay, so what's the process that you just, how did you decide you were going to follow up about this speeding ticket that Art told you about?
So I sent records requests to some of the major metropolitan areas and to all the state police troops.
For records relating to what, Maura Murray?
Yes, and a speeding ticket.
And a speeding ticket.
Mm-hmm. So a little while later, I got a response from Hooksett Police Department that showed Maura had been pulled over on July 27th, 2003, fairly early in the morning. I think it was like 7 in the morning. And it noted that she was going 99 in a 65 on Route 93 North.
Right. 99. So exactly 1 mile per hour under 100. Interesting.
Yeah. So she was probably going like a little over 100 and the police officer gave her a break.
Okay. So how many months before her going missing is this?
So this was in July of 2003. So
what, 7 months?
Yep. 7 months.
Okay. And so she gets this ticket. But what I think is interesting is that you did reach out to Chuck West to talk to him about this, correct?
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that he had this information and was aware of it. And at that time, he had asked me not to share it with anyone because it could be a lead.
Interesting. So they were working it at the same time you were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, when did that happen? So when did you talk to Chuck?
So it took me a while to get all of the information, actually, because it just sometimes takes a while for all these records to come in. I had to also request records from the court. But it was like February or March of this year that I called him and told him about it. And that's when he asked me not to say anything or not to publicize.
So that's kind of why you've sat on it for this long.
Right.
Well, and sat on it as far as not releasing it to the public. But in the meantime, you were chasing a bunch of stuff down.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I talked to Julie about it and asked if there was any reason Maura might be in New Hampshire. At the time she got the ticket, she was driving her dad's car. She wasn't driving the Saturn. So that may have been an indication she was with her family, but we couldn't figure it out. She didn't know. I mean, it was 16 years later. Mm-hmm. So they just didn't remember why she might have been there on that particular day. But then in April, we got a copy of Sharon Roush's notes that one of the investigators had put together in 2004. And within the first two pages, it said, Fred, Maura, and Billy had spent a vacation together in the White Mountains in July of 2003.
Well, that's it right there.
Well, we sort of couldn't conclusively say that that's why she was there.
Sure, because it doesn't say the date. Yeah.
Right.
But it's a pretty strong clue.
Yeah, I thought so. So I forwarded it to Detective West. And then it wasn't until months later that Julie was going through some of the letters that Maura had left behind, a lot of them from Bill. Uh-huh. And there was one postmarked July 31st, 2003. And it starts off, Maura, I've been back for 3 days now. And then there was another one postmarked August 2nd, 2003. And he mentions that, I don't even need to ask you if you had the best week in New Hampshire with your dad. And it goes on, like later on, he says, get back from New Hampshire soon. I'm dying to hear from you, Bill. So these letters kind of definitively prove that Maura was in New Hampshire with Bill and her dad when she got the speeding ticket. And it seems pretty likely that she was on her way back from dropping off Bill at the airport when she got the ticket in her father's car.
Right. Yeah, the times line up because she got the ticket on the 27th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the 31st, there's a letter from Bill saying he's been back for 3 days.
Yeah. So that lines up pretty perfectly.
Yeah. So I forwarded these to Detective West and asked him if it was still necessary to keep this under wraps. And he said, no, there's no need. You can release it if you'd like. So I think that the police agree that it's probably irrelevant in terms of any leads or in terms of like leads that could involve her being there with a person that we're not aware of.
Yeah. Okay. So we now know that there was a speeding ticket and we know why she was in New Hampshire in the summer of 2003. So then what did you do with this information next? Does this have anything to do with why she was in New Hampshire in 2004?
Well, so she had paid the fine for that ticket. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty sizable fine. It was like $300. But because she was going 30 miles per hour over the speed limit, she had to appear in court. It was mandatory. Mm-hmm. And it shows that she did. She pled no contest. And they suspended her license for 30 days in New Hampshire. So from August 27th, 2003 to September 27th, 2003, her license was suspended in New Hampshire. That doesn't mean that she can't drive in Massachusetts or anywhere else. It's just New Hampshire.
Okay. So that court appearance, that was in August then?
Yes.
Okay.
August 27th, 2003.
So she got the ticket on July 27th. Then she went to court on August 27th. And her license was then suspended from then until September 27th.
Correct.
All right.
And again, only in New Hampshire.
Okay. So then by February, she was all good, right?
Well, so what I found out is that in New Hampshire, you don't just have to pay the fine when your license is suspended. You also have to pay a reinstatement fee because it doesn't automatically just reinstate for you when the suspension time is up.
I see. So that's the fine to pay for the person who has to file the paperwork.
I guess so. Right. So it's pretty nominal, but a lot of people don't know about it. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from people in New Hampshire that get pulled over, don't realize that their license is suspended, and then end up having to get their car towed and deal with a bunch of bureaucratic stuff because they had no idea that their license had been suspended.
Yeah, that's actually happened to my mom before. She got her license suspended for not paying a speeding ticket and she had no idea. And then she, you know, paid the fine and then like thought she was all clear and was not all clear because of
the reinstatement.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, I wasn't able to find any indication that she had paid the reinstatement fee. So my hypothesis about this was that maybe she found out that her license was suspended in New Hampshire on the day that she got into the car accident with her dad's car. Because if they ran her license and it popped up, she hadn't broken any laws in Massachusetts, but he might have said, hey, just so you know, your license is suspended in New Hampshire. And the only reason that would have been a problem that required some attention immediately was because you can't register a car in Massachusetts if your license is suspended in another state that they have reciprocity with, which New Hampshire, they do. Mm-hmm. So presumably that Friday, her dad was going to come back to Amherst, return the rental car that he had gotten, get his car back, and they were going to buy a car, and she was going to need to register it. So for her to be able to do that, she would have had to pay the reinstatement fee in New Hampshire and have all of that set by the end of the week. And she could have sent a check. But, you know, you can't really bank on that being taken care of by the end of the week because probably has to get sorted and go to the correct office and they have to go to the bank and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So The quickest way to do it was to bring cash, drop it off, make sure everything's all set for the end of the week when she was going to register the car.
And the speculation, too, is Fred drove it from Connecticut to UMass. So it made it from Connecticut to UMass.
Right. She already knows it can go a ways.
Yeah. So she knows it can make the trip, but it's just not running well.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that Fred had mentioned was that Maura was sort of in charge of figuring out what to do with the Saturn. And he wanted to just junk it. He wanted to get rid of it. Didn't think it was worth, you know, trying to sell or anything. Mm-hmm. But in her phone records, Maura had also made calls to UMass parking services. And I think that the reason for that could have been because when you buy a yearly sticker for your car at Amherst, it's, I don't know, like, I can't remember how much it is. It's several hundred dollars to be able to park your car on campus. And I think that she might have been calling parking services to figure out, like, how do I transfer this pass from an old car to a new car? Do I need to get a new sticker? Do I need to, what do I have to do? Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise, she would have to pay to be parking the Saturn and this new car that she was going to get.
Right.
So to avoid having to pay for two cars, I think it's possible that maybe part of that trip was dropping off the Saturn at her mom's place or her sister's place or somewhere in Massachusetts that she could leave it for a little while before figuring out what to do with it. Because I can understand why Fred might have wanted to just junk the car because it's not worth it for him. Uh-huh. But a couple hundred dollars to a college student who, you know, just got in a wreck with her dad's car and feels bad about it and probably wants to help pay it back. Maybe she was going to try to sell it for a few hundred dollars and, you know, get some of the money back. So I think that might have been what the plan was.
So if she was going to leave the car in New Hampshire, how would she have gotten back to Massachusetts?
Well, I don't think she was going to leave it in New Hampshire. I think she was going to leave it at either her mom or her sister's house or somewhere in Massachusetts.
Like on the way back from New Hampshire?
Yeah. So like, okay. I think she was going to New Hampshire for the night. She was going to take care of the reinstatement, make sure that everything was all set so that she could register a car later in the week and then continue on and drop the car at her mom's or her sister's. And then one of the things in some of the email exchanges between Erin Murphy, the nursing student that was on the Oxygen show, that explained how the homework that they had been doing was to Google maternity terms and send them all to each other. Uh-huh. Terry O'Connell talked to her quite a bit. And in one of her emails, it said that their clinicals was at the Norwood Maternity Ward in Norwood, Massachusetts, on Tuesday evenings.
So you think that she was planning to be back by Tuesday or in Norwood by Tuesday?
Yeah. And I think that if everything went according to plan, then she could get a ride from her clinicals back to Amherst.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
How far away was where she lived in Hanson to Norwood?
About 24 miles.
Okay. So it's not a huge stretch to think that she could have gotten a ride with somebody from clinicals that would have been willing to pick her up at her house, or she could have gotten somebody at her house to give her a ride up to where she was doing her clinicals to catch a ride back to UMass.
Right.
Okay, now let me ask this. I want to make sure that I get my facts straight. Do we know for sure that her license was suspended at the time she had her accident?
No, that is speculation. The reason I don't know is because the New Hampshire State Police refused to tell me. They will not answer the question. I've asked a number of times. I've tried phone calls, emails. They will not answer the question. So I sent another right to know request because they're going to have to respond to me by law.
Right.
They asked for 30 days before they would answer any questions or provide any documents. They blew through that deadline, which is fine, before finally saying that while they cannot confirm or deny that there was any speeding ticket, they're not going to answer the question because it could interfere with the investigation.
So they wouldn't even answer, they wouldn't even say that they knew what you already knew, which is that she had a speeding ticket, let alone talk about whether her license had been actually reinstated.
Correct. And so then I pointed them to Detective Wes email in which he says, "Your concern regarding the public release of information is much appreciated. At this point, releasing the circumstances surrounding the speeding ticket would not jeopardize the case. Thank you. So that was Chuck West. So right. I said, well, wait a second. Chuck is telling me that this has nothing to do with the criminal investigation at this point. And you're saying that it's so sensitive that you can't even confirm or deny whether or not she had the speeding ticket that I already brought to your attention. So,
yeah.
So it seems as though they just don't want to answer the question. And I think if I had to guess, it's probably because her license was, in fact, still suspended.
Now, you tried other avenues to follow up to get records to figure out whether or not her license was suspended. And what did you find there?
Right. So the DMV didn't have any record of it. And I found out the reason for that was because on one of the court documents, it shows that the case was destroyed on March 22nd, 2016. So anything other than what I have in terms of like her driving history and anything related to this case has been destroyed.
Now, you asked an officer that we won't name, but you asked an officer, was this unusual? What was his take on it?
Yeah, and I wish I had the exact quote in front of me, but he gave me the impression that it was fairly unusual, that I wouldn't be able to find out anything further because it had been destroyed.
Uh-huh.
And they typically do not do that.
And when did the Texas crew start filming for the Oxygen Channel?
I don't know when they started filming.
Or started preparing.
I don't know, but I do know it was in 2016.
Right. So obviously, you know, I think you don't want to go too far into conspiracy theories, but maybe it's possible that these records were removed because they were afraid that the documentary would uncover them and then it would be a question that they had to answer. So instead they have the answer, but then they removed the public record that you would have access to. So that way you couldn't get an answer.
Right.
Well, I think it's sad because I think that in the beginning, in the days where I used to talk to Helena all the time, my impression of why law enforcement wouldn't release a lot of things was always because it could hurt or impede the investigation. That's what I thought 100% of the reason was.
Uh-huh.
But it was really disappointing after this last year, we've gotten a little bit more involved, and at least I have, and I've seen a little bit more of their reasoning on why certain things get released compared to others. And it's very disappointing because there's a whole nother decision-making process out there, which is just, to me, it's my impression is like, we're law enforcement and we just don't want to release stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the hassle of people questioning stuff that we release. So we're just not going to release anything at all. Like it has nothing to do with impeding the investigation. It just has to do with them not wanting negative feedback or people speculating about certain things. And so they just refuse to release anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like also a pretty good example of why releasing certain information might not be such a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't have everything that Julie and the Murrays have.
Uh-huh.
They never would have known that it was a camping trip with Fred and her boyfriend and had nothing to do with anything. I mean, it seems like it would save time for them and everyone else if they could release some of this information and help clear up some of the questions that they have, fill in the gaps.
Yeah, as people like you and Julie and Scott and I and others who can go through some of this stuff, you know, and rule things out or at least explain, you know, fill in pieces of the puzzle for them.
One of the things that I wanted to emphasize is, again, I think that this is like really big information because it's the first time that like it pieces together a very possible path that Maura was planning on taking that's very evidence based. And I think it's important to like say that it's a theory, but at the same time, like it is the first time that I've heard anybody piece together a path of where she could have gone and where she went.
And why?
And like, and it's all very logical. And so,
well, I guess that is a good question though. Does it matter? Like, does it have any implications for what happened to her or why she disappeared?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because it's the same argument as the car, right? People say, well, why does the car matter? It doesn't matter. She went missing. Doesn't matter. Who matter? It doesn't matter. Well, it matters because you have a whole bunch of people that come up with these theories that, you know, aliens picked her up and it never went into the ditch and it was miraculously staged, but nobody ever saw it being staged. And like, so you have all these crazy theories. And then when you really start to like piece things together and you start to take all these different pieces of evidence that all start to like line up, you start to realize that there's probably a very non-spectacular answer to what actually happened concerning the accident, which is she probably went around the corner too fast, lost control of the vehicle, went into the ditch, backed it out, parked it on the side of the road. That's as much as we know. But the reason I think that that's critically important is because it answers one more question of the puzzle. So I don't think that this theory eliminates other possibilities, but it's using the facts that we know to draw some sort of logical conclusion, which is what we should all be striving for. Instead of like, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, I think that the accident scene was staged. And I go, okay, I want to hear your theory. Give me something that's plausible based on the facts that we know. And everything that they give me, it's not fact-based. It's just a theory based off of a feeling or possibilities. So to answer Ethan, which I think is an excellent question, does this tell us what happened to Maura? No, it doesn't tell us what happened to Maura. But
I didn't ask that. That wasn't me. What?
That was me.
Okay, but that's all right. Okay, sorry. So but I think that the point is that it answers questions. It could potentially answer questions on what didn't happen.
It provides a potential answer for people wondering why she was there.
Right.
Which without having a plausible answer, it invites speculation. So I think it is good to have a plausible answer beyond what we previously would always say, which was that, well, maybe she just wanted to get away from it all, which is like unsatisfying.
Right. And it's something that can also be falsified.
Yes.
My problem with a lot of the theories out there is that despite people being quite adamant about some of them, like there's no way to follow up or falsify or disprove or prove. So,
yeah. Right.
The more that you can sort of say with some degree of certainty, the better, I think.
Yeah. Like if someone can prove that her license was not suspended at that time.
Right, right. Which is what I've been trying to do for over a year now.
Right.
And have not gotten anywhere.
Yeah. So I would say if people want to help, see if you could figure it out. Is there some avenue that you haven't tried to obtain?
Right.
Information as to what the status of her license was in February of 2004.
Right.
That's what we don't know. That would help either give more evidence to this possibility or...
Or falsify it. Or say it wasn't a problem. It wasn't an issue. The other thing, though, that may have some implication is the decisions that she made after she had gotten into the accident. Because presumably she would have known that she was illegally driving in New Hampshire at the time.
Right.
Because until she paid that reinstatement fee, you know, she was subject to getting arrested for not having a valid license.
That's a good point. That's a reason for her to be arrested by a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least put in his vehicle because he'd say like, well, you can't drive. So you're getting in my car and I'm taking you somewhere while we get the car towed. And that would be a reason for her to be like, okay, I have to get in this car.
Perhaps it may give her a reason to want to get away from the accident.
To try to move the car afterward, to try to drive it.
And that could also explain the rag in the tailpipe.
Yes.
How?
To deter police interest in her car.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, it's like, might seem silly. Like, why is she so worried about, like, the smoke, you know, exhaust? But if she really, really can't get pulled over.
Right.
So let's review a little bit, and then we'll ask Julie some specific questions. So one, we know that she had gotten a speeding ticket. We know that her license got suspended as a result of that speeding ticket. We know that she made a phone call to Bartlett, and we know that her and Bill and your dad had just been 7 months earlier. So it's not a big stretch to think that she's going back to an area that she's familiar with. So she takes her running stuff. She's already familiar with the area and know where she can go run. And
yeah,
she's going to, you know, spend one night and then drive south because she has responsibilities. She has to go pay her reinstatement fee, providing it was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Then she would go down to your parents. Her clinicals were on Tuesday evenings and Wednesdays. And she had already been getting rides back and forth with friends. So she was already accustomed to that happening. It wasn't like a new thing that she was going to have to set up. So that's kind of like the recap of the theory. And so the idea is that how realistic is it that Maura would have taken the effort to go do this stuff?
It's very realistic, especially given that she was about to get a new car and she couldn't just leave the Saturn in UMass parking lot forever. The only reason why it was in UMass parking lot was because there was no else for it to go.
Was there ever like a plan, or did anybody ever know of a plan of what was going to need to happen with the car after she got the new one?
Well, the original plan when my dad was there the weekend prior was wherever they bought the car, the new car, the used car, they were going to just give the Saturn, just here, take it.
Right.
Get rid of it. Because it just sat in the parking lot because she wasn't supposed to drive it.
Right.
And ever since my dad drove it from Connecticut, where it had its issues, he wouldn't even let her drive it. He drove it from Connecticut up to UMass and said, don't drive this car. And it was just sitting there as a holding place.
Mm-hmm. Right. But obviously, she wasn't going to be able to have two cars at UMass without register or paying for a second vehicle.
Exactly. So it would make sense for her to, you know, try to handle it.
Yeah.
And maybe leave it off in Hanson.
Well, I think, Aaron, you had a really good theory about the car, and that was that, I mean, she was returning like bottles and cans for some change. Maybe she felt that she could get something more out of the car than just giving it to the dealership.
Right, right. So instead of junking it, because I think your dad said he just wanted to junk it, but that's because he probably doesn't see the value in a few hundred dollars for the time and effort it would take. But I could see how Maura might think that it's worth the effort, rather than just junking it entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially since she wouldn't be able to have it, or like you said, two cars at UMass.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking about Maura, who's, you know, cashing in coins.
Right.
So of course, if she sees value in something, she would take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of money when you're like 21.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows what was in her bank account. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, when I was that age, I used to scrounge for change, for fuel,
mm-hmm.
for gas money to get to and from work.
Yeah.
I used to take the bus to go return cans. I was so broke.
But yeah, and she would never ask my dad for money unless she absolutely needed it.
So you think after having the accident in your dad's car, you think that she would have done everything she could to try to take anything off of his plate?
Yeah, and she would always do that. So not just financially, like financially especially.
Yeah.
And a quick example of that is whenever we would go out to eat, we wouldn't order anything that was on the high end that we would consider expensive.
Right.
And another example is whenever we'd go clothes shopping, we'd get like the cheapest stuff. No name brands. My dad would make us get like the Nike running shoes because... You know, so we wouldn't, you know, have stress fractures and stuff like that. But for us, we're like, oh, no, Dad, we got it. We'll just get these cheaper ones. And that's just how we are. It's just in us.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, Mar and I both went to West Point, and there's a couple different reasons. But the main one was it wouldn't be a financial burden on our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just how we lived. That's how we grew up. I mean, we grew up in a family with five kids, and we were all frugal. We still are. I still am. And Maura clearly was by returning the cans.
Right.
So there's the financial burden that I know she would never want to cause my dad any more financial burden than she had already thought that she did. Although his insurance covered the accident in Hadley, so it wasn't really a big deal. But to her, it was.
Right.
I know it was. And then she didn't want to cause anybody any hassle. So that's why people say a lot of times, like, she kind of took care of things herself. That's true. She did. We all did.
Mm-hmm.
And then she knew that she, you know, caused my dad some, you know, stress by crashing the car in Hadley. And so she probably wanted to relieve any of that stress or take any of that off the plate that she could within her means. And one of those things could have been, hey, I'm just going to jump in the Saturn, go take care of this ticket, drop the car off in Hanson. And there's two burdens that she's just cleared off the plate.
All right.
So it's very plausible.
And then the other thing that you had told me that I thought was important was, I said, would it be unusual for Maura to show up at your mom's house without announcing it?
No.
Yeah. You're like, it's just, that's just where she's, that was her place. Like, so.
Yeah. I mean, that was where we grew up. And my mom would be really, I would say that Maura might even surprise my mom and just show up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And help her out. Yeah. That would be a good surprise for my mom.
I think that that's also important as it relates to her telling somebody, because I think at the time she didn't view the place in Hanson like not her home. So it wasn't unusual that she would just come and go whenever she needed to from the house in Hanson. So is it unusual that she didn't call ahead of time and say, I'm coming? And it wasn't unusual.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And it's one that people bring up all the time, that she hadn't told anyone where she was or what she was doing, where she was going. But that doesn't mean that she didn't plan to tell them. I mean, it sounded like she was kind of in a rushed mood. Like when she emailed Bill and said, I'll talk to you later. She literally said she didn't feel like talking. So, you know, wherever she ends up that night, she could have settled in and then called.
Right.
Right. And I'm not sure exactly where you lose signal, but maybe she had planned the whole time to call somebody, and then by the time she remembered to do that, there was no signal.
Right. Yeah, I know that going up from UMass, going up 91, it's like spotty. Like the signal goes in and out a lot.
Yeah, once you get into Vermont, it's really spotty.
You know somebody in Vermont, you could probably get that taken care of, Aaron.
Well, here's the deal. Nobody knows why Maura went to New Hampshire. So this theory could work, because if you think about it, if she would have told my dad, hey, Dad, I'm going to go take the Saturn and I'm going to drive it to New Hampshire at 7 o'clock on Monday night in these conditions with the Saturn operating the way it was to pay the reinstatement fee, my dad would have said, you're crazy. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. No. If she would have said that to me, I would have said, no, you're crazy. That's the dumbest idea. So if we think about it, she told nobody because it was a dumb idea.
Yep.
Right? And so if we think about it along those lines, it makes sense for her not to tell anyone.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought too, especially because she had just had the accident. She probably felt bad about it. And now here's another thing that was a mistake that she's taken care of. And the last thing she wants to do is talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's it.
Yeah. I said earlier, I think that out of all of the theories that people come up with, very few of them are fact-based, or they only take like one piece or two pieces tops of something that we know. And then they build this huge theory around it. This is the first time where I feel like there's multiple facts that tie this whole thing together. And I mean, and it's still just a theory, but it seems like a really solid one because of how many different pieces of information that all seem to make sense, you know?
And, you know, I've over the years, I've always tried to wrap my head around, with all this stuff going on, and she just crashed the car and my dad's got this rental and we knew that he was coming back up. Why would she say, you know what, I'm just going to take some me time? Because that wasn't in her character either. And I'm back and forth on that. I never was 100% sold on she wanted to go escape and relax and just have me time.
Yeah. But I guess the first night, like her going to North Conway for like one night would be technically me time.
Yeah, you're right. It would be. You know, if you had to go pay a ticket and it meant that you had to go to a place you loved and you're kind of upset with everything that's going on in your life, then yeah, I could see her taking advantage of that. But to go there for the sole purpose of just getting away from life and not telling anyone? I think the key here is she didn't tell anyone, and there's a reason why she didn't tell anyone, because it was a dumb idea.
Right. And she knew that you and your father would be like, that's dumb.
And my mother and anyone else on planet Earth that she suggested that idea to.
Yeah. Like, you're going to go drive your car that you're not supposed to be driving. No.
2 hours.
Yeah.
Alone and not tell anyone.
Right.
But that's a tight, like, that would be something that she would do. You know, just beg for forgiveness later after the fact and be like, hey, Dad, guess what? I solved a small portion of this issue.
Right.
And he'd be like, why did you do that? That was dumb.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. So this is something that, you know, Aaron, you started kind of looking at a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we've taken it up to a point where we don't have all of the answers, but we've also kind of gotten the go ahead to talk about some of these things. And who knows, like, some of the other people that follow this and listen to this might be able to figure out some of the answers that we don't have, you know, some of the procedural things, or they may know. So I think that one of the reasons that I bring this up is because a lot of times I'll talk to a lot of people on social media and they have this impression like there's nothing going on behind the scenes. To me, that's actually always frustrating because I know that there's a lot of things that go on sometimes on a daily basis on just little things like this that are getting followed up on to try to like rule it in or out.
Yeah. And that goes to the when people always say that the family knows so much and isn't sharing it. The fact of the matter is I do know I am privy to some information that I will not share publicly or share with anybody because I've given law enforcement my word. And my word actually means something. So
right.
I'm not going to do it.
By the way, you know where the Hooksett Police Department and the Sixth Circuit Court in New Hampshire is? It's pretty close to Londonderry.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Londonderry ping that was from like later in that day, the call had to have originated within 22 miles. And Hooksett is only 16 miles. It puts everything within Hooksett well in reach of that tower.
Yeah.
So as soon as I learned that the speeding ticket was in Hooksett, that was my first thought. As I was like, that's right near Londonderry. I wonder if those two things have anything to do with each other.
Yeah.
I have one more question and it'll be really quick. Do you have any idea about the state of Maura's dorm room and whether or not you think she hadn't yet unpacked or she had packed up her stuff?
Oh, I do not believe that she packed up her stuff. I believe she just never got around to unpacking.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's Maura. Like, for me, I'm different. I would have unpacked everything the minute I stepped foot in back in the room. But Maura, she's got so much going on, you know, thinking about all the kinds of stuff and wants to go do stuff. She would just, yeah, throw it down. I mean, growing up, Maura was the messy one. Like, it wouldn't have been important for her to unpack all that stuff before she went, you know, about her day.
You guys could not have shared a room.
We did share a room.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you fight all the time?
All out battles. Yeah. Like, for me, I'm like OCD and everything needs to have its place. And for Maura, she's just like, whatever. I mean, it's the youngest child. I mean, she had, you know, Curtis is the youngest, but Maura was the youngest. And then there was a big gap. So there's like two youngest. But yeah, Maura definitely exhibited youngest child tendencies, which is like a free-for-all in terms of like keeping your stuff in order. I mean, and when you think about the Saturn and all the different random stuff she had in it in the trunk.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, she had how many different types of soap or lotion or whatever? Like, if you look at my trunk, I would have one of everything that I need, like no more. But, you know, that was just Maura. She'd have a bunch of crap everywhere. Drove me insane. So yeah, to answer your question, it wouldn't be atypical for her to not have unpacked.
Okay.